Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Let me be straight with you. This is a radio commercial for 3 small business insurance. The policy has no fine print. It's clear what's covered. So while you can't see the following scene, just know that this pet store is protected by 3.
Joe, did you leave the snake tank open?
Look, I don't want to point fingers, but yes.
It's fighting me! Sorry, sir! I'm calling my lawyer.
They're going to need some help with this mess. Luckily, they have 3. No fine print, just exceptional coverage. 3 is a product of Berkshire Hathaway Direct Insurance Company. 3. No nonsense, just common sense.
CBD Revolution. The world is discovering CBD and its potential for numerous health benefits. Hemp Fusion Wellness is the premier company looking at CBD with a whole food perspective. For the highest quality CBD oils and products for stress, sleep, energy, and topicals, it's Hemp Fusion. This CBD Revolution highlight has been brought to you by Hemp Fusion Wellness, U.S. trading symbol CBDHF, and in Canada, CBD.U. Web address, hempfusion.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, writing most recently at Survival, Vindicating Realist Internationalism. This is an essay composed within these last days with all the current events of liberal internationalism, which we will define in a moment, and realism in response, which we'll define in a moment, following the tragedy of Afghanistan and observing the ongoing arrangements of allies and partners for the next step of confronting challenges to the security of the United States and its allies, NATO, I'm thinking chiefly of Europe, Vindicating Realist Internationalism. Anatole has written an essay in response to 2 other public intellectuals about American foreign policy and NATO foreign policy and foreign policy at least since the Second World War, 75 years and more. And in response, he points me to a quote from a very famous historian and commentator of my youth, Sivan Woodward, writing at the time of the Vietnam War, a tragedy of the 20th century that is still with us because the generation that lived through it, my generation, the boomers, are still with us. Some of them are in the councils of government in many countries. These are the late 60s, 70-year-old men and women who remember the Vietnam tragedy. Sivan Woodward wrote, at the time of the Vietnam War, the characteristic American adjustment to the current foreign and domestic enigmas that confound our national myths has not been to abandon the myths, but to reaffirm them. Solutions are sought along traditional lines. Whatever the differences and enmities that divide advocates and opponents, and they are admittedly formidable, both sides seem predominantly unshaken in their adherence to one or another or all of the common national myths. End quote. One national myth that reverberates from my childhood and learning from my father and learning from my family from Indiana is the national myth that America is the redeemer nation, the savior for freedom. That is a national myth, and it has served America for at least 2 centuries. Anatole, a very good evening to you. Beg pardon the prologue, but I'm Americanizing your wonderful essay, and you will speak to the Atlanticists for all of our listeners, people who understand European history, British history in particular, and American history. Sivan Woodward, who was he? And his criticism of a common national myth, how did this apply at that time to the Vietnam War? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. He was a great American historian of the middle part of the last century. His most famous work was on the South, The Burden of Southern History. But at the time of the Vietnam War, he, along with others, Richard Hofstadter, for example, became one of the great intellectual critics of the way in which American national myths, as you've said, of America as the redeeming and liberating nation, had become misused to serve militarist purposes, and had also got in the way of both serious analysis of what America was doing on the part of the American intelligentsia, but had also blocked opposition to American actions on the part of people who would otherwise have opposed them within the United States. I was drawn to the work of Woodward and others of his generation, the generation of critics of the Vietnam War, because of my own work in opposition to the Iraq War, and a book I wrote at that time, America Right or Wrong, An Anatomy of American Nationalism, in which I examined the way in which these myths had also been used, in some cases sincerely, in others insincerely, by the Bush administration to justify the Iraq War, and the way in which this had won over, or either won over or silenced, many American liberal intellectuals who one would otherwise have expected to oppose the war. So that that is C. Vann Woodward, and I really tried in my book and in this essay to revive the memory of that great generation of American intellectual analysts and critics for the present generation, because of course what this brings out is that this is a problem, as you say, that has repeated itself in one form or another, generation after generation. This is not a new syndrome. I should say, however, to begin with, that of course, like all great myths, this American myth has a foundation in truth, in the tremendous importance of America's democratic example to the world, but also, of course, the fact that America really did rescue Western Europe from Nazism and then protect it against Stalinist communism in the 1940s and 50s. But, of course, as we've seen several times since then, this memory and this myth has subsequently both been repeatedly misused for American imperial purposes, not in the service of freedom or liberation, and also in the process has become mixed up with a whole set of American actions in the world, which are totally at variance with, the meaning, the true and good meaning of the original myth.
Your essay is in response to essays and remarks by Professor Daniel Dewdney and Professor G. John Eikenberry. And they are self-described, I believe, as liberal internationalism. It's time to do some definitions. What is liberal internationalism right now, here in the 21st century?
Well, what liberal internationalists think they are is advocates of a peaceful world system made up of democratic states which don't go to war with each other, which cooperate against common evils like climate change. But what so many of them are in practice is people who, either because they are actually American nationalists, or because they simply feel completely dependent on American military power to pursue their liberal agenda, are in fact supporters of American global hegemony. And once again, as we've seen again and again, sometimes this works, for liberal aims, and sometimes it works for completely illiberal aims. In any case, of course, whatever you want to call it, it isn't truly internationalist, because it depends ultimately on the United States dominating the world and telling the rest of the world what to do. And of course, as we've seen in this latest clash with France, for example, this does not only depend on opposing authoritarian regimes around the world, it also depends on suppressing, whenever necessary, democratic governments if they oppose the will of the United States.
Yes, the ironies of the present conversation between France and America are so vast we have no time for them. So I go to a liberal internationalist who was not a professor, but was the leader of your country at the critical period of the decision for Afghanistan and for Iraq. This is Tony Blair in a speech Anatole is citing in his essay, A Doctrine of the International Community, delivered in Chicago in July of 2003. The prime minister, still a significant voice here in the third decade of the 21st century, the prime minister then said, ours are not Western values. They are the universal values of the human spirit. And anywhere, anytime, ordinary people are given the chance to choose, the choice is the same. Freedom, not tyranny. Democracy, not dictatorship. Does this point to the fact that liberal internationalism is also a vital school in the United Kingdom, in the English-speaking parts of the globe, the Anglophiles, all practicing liberal internationalism?
Well, yes, not to the same degree as in the United States, partly perhaps because a few more Brits have a sense of our own imperial history and how, there were certain elements of liberal internationalism in that history, but there were also, of course, enormous amounts of conquest, plunder, exploitation, and so on and so forth, which Blair, of course, simply could not recognize. But statements like this, I mean, to a historian like me or a much greater historian like Woodward, are almost unbelievably stupid and historically illiterate, as well as being, of course, extremely dangerous, because they're quite obviously not true. People have interpreted freedom in radically different ways over the centuries and millennia, as is notorious. Our ancestors, whether in England in the 18th century or in America at the time of the Revolution, had a very different idea of what freedom means from, and indeed what democracy means, from what people think today. All of these things are determined by history, by culture, by circumstances. And, you know, we've just seen in Afghanistan how a very large number of Afghans, whether a majority or not is impossible to say, but certainly a huge number of Afghans who have supported the Taliban rejected categorically the benefits which we said we wanted to offer them, the kind of freedom which we were proposing in Afghanistan. They didn't want it. I mean, quite apart from the fact that we didn't bring anything of the sort, if you look at the nature of the Kabul regime. So there is a sort of self-delusion to the point of, you know, self-intoxication with this view. But of course, it is a tremendous ideological support for American power in the world, or American and British support for American power, and anyone who wants to latch on to that power. Of course, there are many allies of this view around the world, in the world today, but there are also, of course, a huge number of enemies, and they're not just autocrats in other countries. They are ordinary people who do not want to have their Western culture and ideals imposed on them by the force of American power.
I want to speak of another of your prime ministers who hesitated for liberal internationalism at the time of the Vietnam War, Harold Macmillan. When we come back, I'm speaking to Anatole Levin at the Quincy Institute, writing most recently an essay, Vindicating Realist Internationalism, which we will define. But we're applying it to the sweep of the 20th century and the 21st century American episodes overseas, foreign policies expressed with military, diplomatic, and humanitarian aid. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.